Good afternoon, Dr. Dan Guerra, Clinical Biochemistry Podcast. Today is, of course, the 20th of March, 2024, and this is going to be lecture number 2 in inflammasomes. So let's get back to our discussion. We were talking about two different proteins that have been typically linked to what is known as canonical autophagy. Because this particular type of autophagy is dependent on the activity of these two polypeptides. So ATG5 and ATG7 are typically considered essential for autophagy. But there are cell lines which are deficient or low in those two polypeptides, and nevertheless, autophagolysosomes are generated, and autophagy can be demonstrated. So it seems to be an independent modality. In fact, in the mammalian autophagy literature, you have the two different pathways. You have the conventional ATG5-7 and then the independent pathway. Now, the independent pathway has another name. It's called the Golgi-mediated degradative pathway. And it is stimulus-dependent, but it's also dependent on what the cell is functioning in relative to the production of ATP and whether or not the stimulation is directly linked to the conventional induction of the process, which, as you remember, involves cGAS sting. Now, we were talking about this paper that's in press in JBC. That was looking at ultraviolet light B of that particular set of wavelengths. That they demonstrate that UVB does induce the NLRP3 inflammasome, as you will recall. And that activation was suppressed through the clearance of damaged mitochondria via the ATG5-ATG7 independent autophagic pathway. So we're going to get to that as an ultimate result, but we're going to need to talk about how they did the experiment. So at onset, what is their hypothetical deduction? They want to ask the question, what regulates ultraviolet light B wavelengths induced inflammasome activation in normal human epidermal keratinocytes? So they set up an experiment to interrogate UVB-induced interleukin-1 beta production. Remember, that's one of the primary pro-inflammatory cytokines that is associated with the inflammasome. And so they're using UVB-induced IL-1 beta as the readout for inflammasome activation. And they wanted then to examine with this inflammasome activation what occurs with autophagy if they modulate pharmacologically the autophagic response. So, first of all, they found that UVB increased IL-1 beta production in the keratinocytes. And that particular production was promoted in the presence of an inhibitor of autophagy. The inhibitor of autophagy they use is very common, 3-methyladenine. Now, the specificity of 3-methyladenine for just controlling autophagy has not well been worked out, but it is an inhibitor of autophagy. Okay. So they also monitored autophagy by using a kit that they bought from Enzo Life Sciences. So I have to explain to you what this kit is involved in, right? It's another component of their experimentation. And when they used the kit, by the way, they found out that autophagy was indeed inhibited. And yet they got IL-1 beta production, okay? Which still suggests there is an inflammasome-mediated response in this UVB-induced sunburn activity. So for the CytoID kit, what kind of things can we say about it? First of all, no transfection is required, and the protocol can be validated with known inhibitors and activators of autophagy. They claim that their kit is selective and that the staining is comprehensive because it will show differentiation between autophagy and the autophagolysosomal accumulation. Okay, so they're separating those two subcellular matrices. They also claim that the staining that they have is very low just for regular lysozymes, and they say it's high throughput, so they can do a lot of analyses on one plate. So the kit measures autophagic vacuoles and monitors autophagic flux in lysosomally inhibited cell line. And they use a specific dye to be able to measure that. Okay. And the dye, you know, it's a spectrophotometric, you know, so it's all done with a plate reader. So I don't need to go any more detail than that, I don't believe. So I should detail this. There are different type of autophagic inhibitors. So there's one called SAR405, and that's an inhibitor of the VPS34. Whereas another inhibitor you can use, SBI, I'm not going to tell you the entire nomenclature for it, it's several numerals, inhibits autophagy initiator kinase 1. That, of course, is ULK1. It also significantly promotes UVB-induced interleukin 1 beta production from keratinocytes. Now, that's interesting. However, rapamycin, which is, of course, going to be controlling mTOR, and that, of course, is directly linked to autophagy because it's involved in the induction of autophagy as mTOR. Rapamycin will significantly suppress UVB-induced IL-1 beta production. Now, what does that suggest? Could mean that the involvement of autophagy in UVB-induced inflammasome activation is still relevant. Okay. Now, the inflammasome component NLRP3, which we've already introduced, is required for UVB-induced IL-1 beta production in human keratinocytes in culture. And in fact, its expression is elevated in UV-irradiated human epidermis in vivo. So we know that this is what occurs naturally. So they want to determine if NLRP3 is indeed associated with the amplification of interleukin 1 beta under inhibition of autophagy using that kit. And so they prepared keratinocytes in which the NLRP3 inflammasome was indeed downregulated. And how they downregulated the inflammasome was using a small interfering RNA, classical experiment. So the knockdown of NLRP3 did indeed abolish the 3MA-mediated interleukin 1 beta production from UVB-irradiated keratinocytes. And furthermore, they show that 3MA mediated interleukin 1 beta production from UVB irradiated keratinocytes was indeed inhibited by the treatment of MCC950. Now, what is MCC950? That inhibits NLRP3. Okay, so they're dissecting the separation between the inflammasome itself and the associated production of the pro-inflammatory cytokine related to UVB induction. Okay. So they further on say that they observe the influence of knockdown of NLRP in 3MA-mediated interleukin-1 beta production, of course, under UVB-irradiated keratinocytes. Okay? So they're claiming they did not observe that. So not observing it might indicate that autophagy itself, and this would be logical from what we understand about autophagy, suppresses UVB-induced NLRP3 inflammasome activation. Okay. So autophagy works to counteract the inflammasome. And thus, when autophagy is functioning appropriately physiologically, that would be a decrease in the inflammation response and therefore ultimately the readout, the sunburn activity. Okay? You get how this is functioning. So they do go on to show that they're looking at an HEG5/7 independent alternative autophagy, but it's still autophagic. And what happens is that system that they're inducing participates in the suppression of UVB-induced inflammasome activation in these human keratinocytes. So this is another way of saying what I already just explained to you. Now, what they wanted to know, more detail, obviously, they wanted to know whether the genetic ablation of conventional autophagy, that would be ATG5-7, okay, promoted UVB-induced inflammasome activation. Okay? So they want to know if they inhibited the conventional autophagy, would it promote UVB inflammasome activation? So what they had to do was measure the level of UVB-induced IL-1 beta by keratinocytes in which the ATG5 and 7 genes were silenced. And that's why they used the siRNA. Okay? And indeed, when ATG5 and 7 were knocked down by siRNA to them in keratinocytes, and the expression level of the LC3B, now that's the microtubule-associated protein light chain, and of course that's the standard marker for conventional autophagy, was indeed inclusively inhibited under the silencing of ATG5 or ATG7 or both. However, the actual level of ultraviolet B-induced interleukin-1 beta production was unaffected. Okay? And so that was found in ATG5 or ATG7 knockdown keratinocytes, even though they successfully inhibited conventional autophagy. So associated with all of this so far, the level of the pro-inflammatory cytokine IL-6 was also unaffected by UVB radiation in either of those ATG knockdowns. Okay? So they're clearly demonstrating that they're looking at an alternative pathway for autophagy, and that autophagy is still regulating the inflammasome activity. All right? Okay. So now let's back up and discuss more detail of this process of the inflammasome. Now, in response to any kind of severe chemical or physical injury, there's going to be a nucleotide binding domain and leucine rich repeat protein 3 inflammasome activation. So that's where you get the NLRP3. Nucleotide binding domain and leucine rich repeat protein 3 is NLRP3. Now, we know from the literature, and we've known this for quite a while, well, over probably 20 years, that this NLRP3 inflammasome is a significant sensor and effector of tissue damage. And in fact, it's activated, and then we get caspase 1 mediated proteolytic interleukin 1 beta and interleukin 18 processing and secretion. Okay, generating the pro-inflammatory cytokines. So the NLRP3 inflammasome, what is it in molecular detail? It is a relatively large mass cytosolic complex formed by that sensor protein NLRP3, and the ASC adapter apoptosis-associated SPEC-like protein containing a caspase activation and recruitment domain. Now, that's a scaffold with this inflammasome. So that whole term I just gave to you, caspase activation recruitment domain 1, is known as a CARD scaffold. Okay? So you have an adapter apoptosis-associated SPEC-like protein, that's ASC, and it contains the CARD scaffold. And the protein kinase NIMA regulates a specific kinase known as NEC7. So that is the NIMA-related kinase 7. And then there's one more protein to deal with, the effector procaspase 1. Okay, so there's several polypeptides involved with this inflammasome induction. I just gave you 4 new proteins to consider. Now, after an injury, so remember the inflammasome can be induced aseptically or with a pathogen. And the two systems will differ in the downstream mediated response, whether it's caused by a pathogen, usually a microorganism, or whether or not it's done chemically. Okay? So they call that a sterile injury when they do it without a pathogen. So after a sterile injury, and that would be similar to UVB, right? The NLRP3 exposes a domain, and it's called a pyrin domain, P-Y-R-I-N, and that binds to that ASC, which then incorporates its CARD domain to recruit procaspase 1. That then triggers its self-cleavage, releasing an active P20 fragment that ultimately is a convertase that takes pro-interleukin 1 beta and pro-interleukin 18 and matures them to their pro-inflammatory proteolytic degradation product. Okay. Now you got the whole picture of how the inflammasome functions. So the process itself has revealed that the inactive NLRP3 will form what's known as a protein structure known as a double ring cage. And that's held together by a leucine-rich repeat, an LRR. That LRR interacts and it essentially shields the PYD, thus preventing any kind of inappropriate activation of the inflammasome. Okay, so that's how it's held in check by that polypeptide fragment. Okay, now exact pathway, all the players and how they function in sequence that triggers NLRP3 inflammasome assembly and activation and then recovery after cell injury is still somewhat nebulous. All the different key players. I told you most of what we know about it up to 2024. And that's, you know, there's that much else we can say about it. But we already have to admit that there are some components of this, particularly recovery, that are still in sort of an occult mode in terms of our research data. Okay? So you have to kind of keep all of that in mind when we're looking at this 2024 paper. Now, how do we know this? Persistent NLRP3 signaling seems to play a major role in chronic autoimmune diseases and chronic metabolic pathologies such as obesity-linked type 2 diabetes, as well as obesity-linked and non-linked atherosclerosis, inflammatory bowel disease, gout, and neurodegenerative disorders, including Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. Okay? So you see there's a lot of unknowns how this inflammasome is involved in all these other pathologies. We understand chemical induction. We understand pathogen induction. But we haven't worked out all the lipid mediation associated with that obesity pathology. And it's going to be lipid mediation. But we do know more than what I'm telling you, and we're going to get involved in that. That's why we're covering these papers, right? So ultimately, we need to have much more detail about this NLRP3. So let's go back and let's examine some papers that are examining the inflammasome. This is going to fill in now our mosaic. And ultimately, we will finish the mosaic, first of all, with the sunburn paper, and then we'll do a few more, okay? Remember some mosaic about the inflammasome. Now, let's talk about primary biliary cholangitis. That's, of course, an inflammatory cholestatic liver disease, right? Kind of classical. Its occurrence, PBC, primary biliary cholangitis, is primary occurrence and progression, and indeed etiology, involve a mutant genetic as well as an immunoepigenetic and environmental, what I'm calling die event ontological paradigm. So there's going to be mutations associated with PBC. There are going to be immunoepigenetic alterations. And there's going to be an environmental, what I'm calling a die event ontological paradigm. Why am I calling a die event ontological? Because it's the third component. So when we do a dialectic, it's two different things. But we do a dialectic involving ontological induction, there's always an inducer, and that's the third component. And here the third component is going to be environmental. And that's going to be regulating it back at the epigenetic level. See? So what's associated with this right away, I can tell you in PBC, we have a nuclear receptor transcription factor mediated alteration of gene expression. Okay. So the clinical manifestation of bile acid induced inflammation and fibrosis is the paradigm. And the management of patient symptoms, including dealing with pruritus, is a typical endpoint in the clinic. Right? So they're looking for a rational therapy to be able to control sodium-dependent bile acid transporter by using inhibition. All right. So this has been well studied. Now, PBC-associated immune responses are going to involve a protein we've discussed in the past. It's called GAL3. Okay. GAL3 is involved in PBC pathogenesis. So obviously, this is not linked to a pathogen, that is a microorganismal induction or a viral induction or a parasitic induction, but it is going to be linked to a specific polypeptide, GAL3, and possibly a mutation or an epigenetic alteration of its expression. Okay, let me check my time here. See, the reason we're doing these multiple layers is so that you see how these mosaics come together in the literature, and I'm examining them at the multiple valency level, you know, the weighting of all these different parameters, so that when you look at the current paper that's in press, you're going to be able to see how it sits directly in the rest of the literature and whether or not it complements what the literature is saying about the two different types of autophagy regulating inflammasomal inflammation, or whether or not the corpus of the literature gives outstanding possibilities different than what the paper is discussing that we are currently putting under the microscope. See, because we want to know whether or not these alternative pathways for autophagy have been demonstrated in other disease states. That's the whole reason I'm going into this PBC right now. So autoimmune cholangitis can be induced in a mouse model by injecting the mouse with a bacteria known as Novosphingobium aromatisivirans. So that's N. aromatisivirans. Okay. You can induce autoimmune cholangitis in the mouse with that bacterium. Now, it is an aromatic compound degrading bacteria, and it's gram negative, non spore forming, non motile, and it's a rod shaped bacteria. So now you know everything you need to know about it. And of course, it's found in deep terrestrial subsurface sediments naturally. So liver infiltrates of this N. aromatisivirans infected mouse have elevated pro-inflammatory macrophages, dendritic cells, natural killer cells, cytotoxic T lymphocytes, and T helper cells. So you have a suite of the most well-described types of the immune response, right? You have the induced response with the T cell lineage, and then you have the uninduced response, right? So you have both forms of the immune activation, okay? So that's interesting because the inflammasome itself is functioning within typically those innate immune cells, right? That's the non-acquired immune response. It's called the innate immune response. I don't always like using the innate word because it suggests that, you know, the innate immune response, as it was classically described in the literature, you know, now 30 years ago at least, was believed to be non-specific and also non-memory. Now we know that the innate immune response can be specific and can generate memory. We talked all about that when we talked about neutrophils, when we talked about dendritic cells, and we talked about macrophages, all of which are of the innate immune lineage, right? So that's why I don't like using the innate, but I'll go ahead and say that, use that term here for right now, okay? Now, what else can I say? GAL3 deletion and treatment with just GAL3 inhibitor reduced inflammatory mononuclear cell infiltrate. And the expression of the NLRP3 inflammasome in the liver infiltrate and interleukin-1 beta production in the livers of bacterially infected mice. So it looks like GAL3 is important because if we delete it, you lose all that inflammasome association. So now we have to really study if GAL3 is involved in most inflammasome activity. And since they did not study GAL3 in the UVB paper, could it still be involved? And should we ask that question when we finish our analysis and synthesis of that paper that's in press? Okay, so that's why I'm going through this route.